everyone. Welcome to our podcast for the week. My name is Rita Sellers. This is Mel. And this is Robert.
Hi, guys.
Robert is our guest speaker today, and he's from a company called Lubrizol. Lubrizol manufacture many ingredients. I'll get Robert to discuss a bit about Lubrizol, but today's discussion is focused on peptides. I know a lot of you ask so many questions about peptides. So we have an expert here in the industry who knows a lot about peptides and what they mean, what they stand for, what can we use them for, and the different types. So
yeah, I'm just gonna add, and Robert, if this is okay, Robert isn't speaking on behalf of Lubrizol today. He's giving us his personal opinion and his, you know, general industry knowledge. So I just want to make that very clear. We've got Robert in today because he's been a longtime friend of pH Factor, and we value his I guess expertise.
Yes.
Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome, yeah. Robert.
Okay, so Robert, we are going to start with peptides, and we get this question all the time. People just, I guess brand owners really want to understand peptides in the personal care space. Are you able to give us like a definition, or what is a peptide?
Certainly. So a peptide in terms of personal care products are generally active ingredients. So ingredients that have a biological function to give a benefit to the skin. Now, peptides are generally a sequence of amino acids. A peptide can be anything from 2 to 50 amino acids sequenced together. But generally in skincare and in personal care products, the sequence goes from about 3 to maybe 9, possibly 10 in some cases. So they're very, very small molecules.
Why amino acids? Why are amino acids so important, and what makes them part of a peptide?
Yeah, so amino acids are the building blocks of life, really. So our body has multitudes of amino acids, and the reason that peptides are so effective is because we can mimic the body's natural biology function by linking these amino acids together in such a way.
So basically the amino acids that we talk about in peptides are generally synthetic or biologically made. How do they?
Traditionally, peptides were synthetic. We can get the amino acids from mineral sources. There are some aspects of natural peptides which can be isolated from plants, but they're generally not pure peptides. They're generally blends that has a high level of proteins, and some of those proteins just happen to be peptides.
Okay. So you mentioned the word pure peptide. Yep. What do you mean by a pure peptide?
So a pure peptide would be a chemical sequence that we can isolate and identify itself. So it's a pure molecule rather than a blend of different molecules together.
Why is that so important?
It's so important because if you have an isolated molecule, you can figure out exactly what that molecule can do to the body.
How good's that?
Fantastic. Yeah.
So obviously in skincare, when we formulate with these specific isolated molecules, it allows us to determine the pathway of that. Is that what you're...
Absolutely. So we can identify a pure molecule. We can work out what the mechanism of action that molecule will have on your skin.
Exactly what we want.
Yeah. So we can find out exactly how it performs. What it does in terms of a biological function, and what happens to it after your body's finished with it as well, because we only have one molecule to look at. Whereas if you have a blend, there could be multitude of different mechanisms, there could be a multitude of pathways, and a multitude of byproducts as well, which some of them may not be so great. Most of them are, but some of them may not be so great. Yeah.
So when you're choosing a peptide, just to go back to the choice of blended or isolated molecules, if we want a certain type of peptide to deliver a certain, a claim, let's say we want it to, you know, help with a wrinkle, or we want it to help with a pigmentation, that's what we really want to focus on. We want to really look at types of isolated peptides.
And certainly, I mean, first thing I would do is looking at what claim you want to make, and then identify the peptide that works on that claim. Having a pure molecule will help you further define that mechanism of action and give you the result that you want. In some cases, you may be able to get a synergistic effect by mixing peptides together, working on different mechanisms to get an even better result.
You answered my next
result.
Question. Can we mix peptides?
Absolutely. And I recommend people do mix their peptides.
Yeah.
I recommend that you have a discussion with your suppliers to find out what mechanisms of action are.
Yeah.
You don't want to waste the usage of your peptide.
Absolutely.
We had some examples of customers in the past using two very similar peptides working on the same mechanism of action. Sure. And I've said to them, well, you'll have some result, but you're wasting your money, really.
Yeah.
Why don't you use this different peptide, which works on a slightly different mechanism of action, and get a synergistic effect together?
Yeah, I guess people tend to think that the more they use of the same, or that type of same peptide, you're going to get, you know, a better effect. It's not always the way, is it?
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And just at the recent IFSCC Congress, mm-hmm. We presented a synergy in peptides of mm-hmm. two of our peptides together, and we were quite surprised at the result using two different peptides mechanism of action and getting a better result than the individual peptides would be on one-on-one. So
if anyone's interested in that, please shoot us an email, a link below, and we'd be more than happy to reach out and get that paper to you.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So I've been hearing a bit of buzz at the moment with hair peptides.
Yes.
So are they the same, or do they have the same effect on the hair as they would on the skin?
I definitely not have the same effect because mm-hmm. you want to design a different peptide for mm-hmm. specifically for the hair. And my understanding is I have never seen a peptide, and I may be wrong, but I've never mm-hmm. seen a peptide that actually works on the hair follicle itself.
Okay.
So most of the peptides that I've seen will work on the scalp, which will then have benefits to the hair. So we differentiate from something like an argan oil, mm-hmm. Which will help with the hair follicles mm-hmm. After they've grown, whereas peptides would work in the scalp, nourish the scalp, which would help give you better hair.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, there's a lot of buzz around scalp health, so those peptides would really benefit brain owners who are wanting to use something to, you know, make those claims around scalp health.
Absolutely.
And also, what trends, I have seen, moving on to scalp health, other trends are you seeing in the peptide space?
Well, peptides tend to be rather innovative, mm-hmm. and in companies like ours will create the next peptide that no one's looking at, and we try and make the trend out of that. Sometimes mm-hmm. it works, sometimes mm-hmm. it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But a real trend I'm seeing at the moment in terms of peptides is the green chemistry to develop the peptide. So actually peptides can cover off all 12 of the green chemistry principles.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
In developing a peptide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The peptides would be about 99.5% natural origin content, mm-hmm. but with low energy use, low atomic waste, low CO2 output, biodegradable as well. So it really follows that sustainability story. So
Robert's just rattling off all the green criteria.
Which is fantastic, because we are seeing, you know, a lot of brand owners, but also it's consumer driven.
Yeah.
That we are now very interested in that sustainability and, you know, it's in ensuring we're using products or ingredients that are going to be, you know, healthy for the planet as well.
We have a lot of brands and customers, like, I know you all ask us about transparency when it comes to ingredients, and we like to, you know, connect you to suppliers who offer that transparency. So if you do want more information on that green chemistry or why those peptides follow that process, we're happy to put you in touch with Robert.
Absolutely. And peptides themselves are generally very green anyway, because the usage level in them is very, very small. So 0.05 to maybe 0.01% in your formulation. So using such a small amount for a big impact from those products.
That was going to be my question. Yeah. Why is it that we only use, when we formulate mm-hmm. with peptides, we're only using, you always see recommended dosage is, you know, 0.01 or 0.1.
Yeah.
Why is it so little? Why do we only use so little of a peptide, and why does it impact so much?
So in general, the peptides are so efficient that you don't need a lot of them. They're also quite expensive to make. So if you're using a lot of it, your formulation costs will be sky high. So we always recommend that follow the manufacturer's recommended dose. In the formulation, look specifically at the percentage peptide in the formulation.
Yes.
Particularly if you're getting different doses, maybe from different suppliers. So always look at the dose, not the percentage of the liquid that you are supplying.
Yeah, of course.
Be very careful of other suppliers saying that 5% of their solution is better than 5% of someone else's solution. Because quite often what you find is they have doubled or tripled the concentration of their solution to match the formulation. And we see that quite a lot with, let's say, the less ethical suppliers.
Yeah.
So reading specifications, obtaining certificate of analysis, so you can actually see the percentage of that actual peptide in there, mm-hmm. that's really crucial. So if you are asking for peptides, if you're asking for samples from different suppliers, just get those documentation and make sure that they are they are listed, or they give you the actual percentage of or a parts per million of that peptide that's in that form, in that concentration.
So we just can't rely on the ink here, and I think that's something we're going to discuss.
Absolutely. So we have in our portfolio three peptides with the same inky name, acetohexapeptide 8. Now, it's our most famous peptide, argireline, it's been around for 25 years. It was the first peptide to mimic the effect of Botox on the skin. And we've actually launched two other products with the same inky name. Now, what does an inky name tell you? So the acetyl tells you that the first amino acid is acetylated. Hexa means there's six amino acids. Peptide tells you it's a peptide. And the eight is just a code that the inventor puts on the end to mark their peptide. So I've told you what the first amino acid is, but these other five can be anything else. Now, I believe there's quite a number. There's more than 20 different amino acids that we can choose. So that is 5 to the power 20 different combinations of peptide that you can have. And any changes to the amino acid could rapidly increase the performance of the peptide. So even if someone says that the inky names are the same, it could be a completely different peptide.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, really interesting.
So how do you know? Like, how does an everyday, you know, if you're just a formulator or you're starting your career out in formulating and you see an acetylhexapeptide 8, how do you know that it's the right one or it's the best one to use?
Yep. So reach out to your suppliers, have discussions with them. Ask the supplier, were you the inventor of this peptide? I think that's very important, because everyone will say, yeah, I've got acetylhexapeptide 8. But are you the inventor? Ask for trade names. Ask for the clinical data. Make sure that the clinical data you get is done by the company that you're buying the peptide off, or they are the representative of that company. Which
very
is
important,
which
everyone. Is very important.
Such a good point.
The other thing about using maybe a copycat peptide to try and have the same effect. Well, first, you won't know the amino acid sequence is correct. But secondly, we've done a lot of research, and we find that it's not just the peptide, but the byproducts are quite important as well. We've discovered a copycat peptide of one of ours where the byproduct in the formulation, if used at the recommended dose in the formulation, you actually have to put a warning label on your product as an irritant in Europe because of the byproduct. So it's not just the inky name and the percentage, but also ask questions about what are the byproducts, what's the peptide purity as well. So peptide purity is generally above 99% in the formulation. So these are important things that people have to ask.
So when we're formulating with peptides, and you mentioned, let's say, the acetyl hexapeptide 8, we see a lot of different things like acetyl, you know, pentapeptide 12 or so. How do people understand, or when they look at inkies, is one better than another, or how do you look at?
Yeah, certainly there's an unwritten rule about suppliers and peptides. We don't benchmark against other people's peptides. It's sort of an unwritten rule in the market. What makes a peptide effective is the whole formulation in itself. So saying that you're using this peptide automatically means using another peptide is better is not the case. When we do our clinical studies, we do it in a very basic cream, water, oil, a little bit of emulsifier, preserved, adjust the pH, and that's it. So there's nothing fancy about our formulations when we do the clinical studies. We expect our customers to do better formulations than us and then get better results. But if you can change the oil in your formulation, that'll change the efficacy of your peptide, because the oil will help penetrate through deliver the peptide into the skin. There was a study done by University College London, and I attended one of their lectures, and they demonstrated that by changing the emollient, changing the solubilizer, and changing the oil actually helps with the different penetration of the particular ingredient in the skin. So you have to take a holistic approach. Look at the mechanism of action. It's very, very important. Now, sometimes it can be confusing looking at biology. Ask an expert to help.
Absolutely.
And make sure that you have the different mechanisms of action in your product for that synergistic effect. And make sure that your whole formulation is designed to deliver that peptide as well.
Amazing. So delivery of peptide, when we talk about the delivery of peptide, because they're so small, is that why they are so efficient? And what forms do these peptides come in? Because you mentioned before liquids and, you know, I see sometimes they can come in powder form. Do they come encapsulated? Does that help? Do they work immediately or do they work long term?
Slow release.
What are the efficacious, I guess, deliveries?
Yeah. Certainly. So peptide itself, a pure peptide, would come in a powder form.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most suppliers will not sell peptide in powders. Because you're using maybe 5 milligrams of mm-hmm. it, you sneeze, you've lost.
That's it.
You've lost a couple
you've
of thousand
it,
dollars
yes.
of product.
They're not cheap.
Yes, so that's the case. So most of them will solubilize it for you and put it into a liquid for ease of formulation.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to find that very few of our customers request the peptide in powder form. The other problem with powder is they can be hygroscopic, which means they pull moisture out the air, so you start to degrade your peptide right away. So it's best to get it in a liquid form.
Yeah.
So
what that means, guys, sorry, Robert, what that means, guys, is if it comes in a powdered form, hygroscopic, so that means that if you continually open and close your teeth, it'll turn out like a rock because the water just gets in there and pulls out the moisture of that peptide. So you'll end up having a rock and you can't actually use it, basically.
Yeah. And you'll ruin the peptide, it'll degrade, and you won't have the efficacy of it as well. So generally, we sell peptides in liquid form, and they're pre-solubilized. And generally,
so much easier.
Generally, our test results are always done on the liquid. So if we recommend 5%, it's 5% of the liquid that you use in your formulation. If you do wish to use the powder, and I only recommend the powder for large-scale manufacturing where you're making tens of thousands of units, and you want to do something special with the powder, then you adjust the percentage of powder to match that of the liquid. You can encapsulate it, you can encapsulate them in liposomes, you can work with your suppliers to do that. Some will have them pre-made, some won't. But generally when it comes to the delivery of a peptide, it's your own formulation that's important.
Yeah.
I always recommend using a special emulsification pair, which will give you what's called a liquid crystal structure. So there's a lot of data saying that if you use the correct emulsifiers, that you will get better penetration of your active ingredients into the skin. Humectants, propylene glycol, pentylene glycol, butylene glycol, really important for delivery into the skin.
Yeah, these solvents are really crucial when we're talking about actives. The solvency of these and the delivery of these actives, and we will talk about liquid crystal structure in a few episodes, but this is really important when it comes to formulating.
Yeah, absolutely. And oil.
Yes.
I see a lot of peptides used in only water serums.
Yep.
Your skin is a water barrier.
Yep.
You need to help penetrate into the skin, and certainly oil can help can help with that.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot, guys. We talk about ensuring that you have both water and oil in your formula. If you do want the best type of performing product, have it. Even if you're having a serum, having a lightly emulsified serum is going to be your best option for delivery of these actives into your skincare products.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have any other questions?
I don't have any. I think Robert's given us some very good...
so much information, Robert.
I'm sure we could go on for hours speaking about peptides. However, that's just a snapshot. Obviously, if you do have any further questions, they can filter through pH Factor. So you can email myself at products@pHfactor.com and we can filter them back through to Robert, certainly.
Definitely. Thank you, Robert, for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
No,
it's been a pleasure.
Yeah,
thank you.
No, and any questions we have, we'll shoot them straight through to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks to everyone who has joined us today.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
See you guys.
See ya. Thank you.